and this is Dr. Robert Wolf, and you're listening to the Run to the Top podcast.
Hello, my running friends. How is your run going today? And more importantly, what are you planning on eating when you get back? Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast, one of the first podcasts dedicated to making you a better runner each week. And it's brought to you by runnersconnect.net, one of the first and best online running coaching companies that can propel your running to the next level. I'm your host, Coach Claire Bartholik, also known as the Planted Runner. And today, we're going to talk about my two most favorite subjects in the world, running and food. As a plant-based runner, one of the most common reactions I get when I mention that I eat zero animal products is, where do you get your protein? The truth is, all plants contain protein. And if you're eating enough calories, you will get enough protein to meet baseline requirements. But that is not to say that I'm an advocate of eating nothing but white rice all day long. An ideal whole foods plant-based diet is rich in protein from multiple food sources to ensure that you're not just meeting your baseline, but you're achieving optimum nutrition to fuel your lifestyle. But today's conversation is not about plants versus animals, so let's get that out of the way right now. It's about how we can optimize our nutrition to become the best runners we can be. My guest today is going to explain just that. Dr. Robert Wolf has been running for over 60 years and has run an amazing 62 marathons under 2 hours and 30 minutes in his lifetime. He's the director of the Center for Translational Research on Aging and Longevity at the University of Arkansas, and his research publications have been cited more than 75,000 times. The focus of Dr. Wolf's research is on the regulation of muscle metabolism. And we get into all the nitty-gritty details about what happens in the body when we run and how our food can help us before, during, and after the run. We, of course, talk about his running career, how to stay young and healthy, and we deep dive into his focus on how amino acids might just be able to help your performance and recovery. And now, here's my conversation with Dr. Robert Wolf. Today's episode is brought to you by Athletic Greens, the daily green supplement that has been the best thing that I've added to my nutrition and daily routine this year. Later in the episode, I'll tell you why I love it so much and how you can get an awesome deal so you can get your daily dose of nutritional assurance too. Welcome to the Run to the Top, Bob.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Before we get into all the science that we're going to talk about exercise metabolism, I want to hear about your running journey. So you've been a runner for over 50 years with 62 marathons under 2:30. Can you tell us a little bit about that, like what your story is and how you started?
Yeah, actually, thinking about it, it's actually exactly 60 years ago that I started running when I was in the ninth grade. My main interest is basketball, but someone said it'd be a good idea to run cross country to get in shape for the basketball season. And I went out and I really liked running. It's a funny thing when you think about why you like something. It's hard to pinpoint it, but I think the main thing that has always driven me was just enjoying running. And my grandson had a birthday party the other day, and he's three, and watching the kids just run around and having fun running, it occurred to me that really that's never been much different for me. You know, I had no real particular goal other than I just enjoy running, and I've done it pretty consistently, almost entirely consistently since first cross-country practice, which in those days involved the first day of practice involved putting on track shoes and running 200-meter intervals. My legs were so sore, I couldn't even get out of bed the next day. But for some reason, I kept it up. And still plodding away today. So it's been a long journey.
Wow, that's great. Well, I can't imagine that every single run was super fun. So I would love to talk about what your training was like, how you trained for marathons, and what are the key ingredients in the recipe for a marathon?
Well, my training program kind of evolved as I kind of learned a little more about it, but and had all the tradition, has always had all the traditional components of it. I think that for my particular circumstance, the two things that really made a huge difference for me was that for most of my life, I ran to and from work. And so I'd pack my clothes up in a pack and head out and run to work and then run from home from work. So I was able to this was particularly helpful when I lived in Boston, where I actually I lived 9 miles from work, and I could get to work just as quick by running as driving, because the traffic was so bad. And so that really was the first part that sort of enabled me to log enough miles. But then the second aspect was once I had a kid and really was pressed for time, buying a treadmill that I could run intervals on the treadmill. So the components are mainly steady running, intervals at least once a week, but usually twice a week, with quarters on Tuesday and mile intervals on Thursday, and then some kind of a tempo run, which would usually be a race of some sort, like five. Well, in those days, everything was in miles, but usually around a shorter race, like 5 mile race. But the crucial part was always at least a 20 mile run on Sunday.
And wow,
that's the same training that I used for 50 years, I'd say. I mean, I'd say that there was very rarely a year that I averaged under 90 miles a week. So,
wow.
So it was a lot of miles, but it wasn't so bad, because I found it not difficult, because in the morning, I never hesitated about it, because I had to get to work. And then in the evening, there'd always come a time when I'd rather go home than stay at work any longer. So I'd run home. And so I never really had to get the energy to push myself to go out the door.
Wow. So 18 miles a day, at least 5 days a week, and then treadmill running.
Yeah, pretty much. There's always some variation, but that was pretty much the routine. Yeah.
Very impressive. So how old were you when you did your last sub-230 marathon?
Well, I can remember the last marathon that wasn't sub-230. And that was that was when I was 54. I ran a 232, and I realized and that's when I tallied up how many I'd run under 230, and felt like, well, I guess age is catching up with me. But I guess I was probably about early 50s. I was still able to run under 230. I think the main thing with all the distance I did sort of gave me longevity more than greatness, because my times never really got much better or worse. They were always about the same. In fact, sometimes I felt like I didn't really even need to run the race, because I knew what I was going to run. But I still enjoyed it.
Oh, wow. Amazing. So as far as fueling goes, let's go into that for a little bit. What does an endurance athlete need before, during, and after exercise?
Well, I think that the traditional way to look at fueling is kind of like gasoline to run an engine, and that you need to eat enough calories to provide the energy provide that energy to contract your muscles and do the running, which is certainly a major focus. And in my case, when I was running that many miles and coming home from work, sometimes not getting home till maybe 8 o'clock at night, I wasn't really able to eat enough to even balance the caloric balance. Then I would get up at about midnight and eat basically another entire meal, or maybe even like an entire cake or something. I'm not discounting the importance of eating enough carbs and calories, but I think that, and I think that's the major focus in any sort of training program, is to be sure that the caloric intake is sufficient. And generally speaking, I think the protein aspect of the diet is extremely important. But as far as dietary protein, when you're eating as many as 4,000 or 5,000 calories a day, even a low protein diet is going to provide enough dietary protein to meet your protein requirements. And as we'll get into the discussion of specific amino acid supplements, that's really kind of a different thing from the dietary protein. And so I want to emphasize that the dietary protein is important, but not really. The reason people haven't really focused on it is because with that many calories, you're bound to eat enough dietary protein. And a good example of that is the Kenyan runners that live predominantly on kind of a gruel that would seemingly be almost all carbohydrate. But then when you calculate how much protein they're eating about 5,000 calories a day, which gives them about double the RDA for protein, even in a very low quality protein food source. So the main focus is getting enough calories. And certainly during the race, you're relying on both fatty acid metabolism as well as carbohydrate, both blood glucose and muscle glycogen, for the bulk of the energy. So there's nothing I'll say today that goes against the traditional concept of the major fuel substrates that we use for exercise are fat and carbohydrates.
Okay, good. I was afraid that you were going to say something different. So good. So as most people know, the three macronutrients that we are concerned about are fat, protein, and carbohydrate. And protein is generally used for repair. So you were saying that dietary protein usually is sufficient if you eat enough calories. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so let's get into the nitty gritty. So your company, The Amino Company, is all about amino acids. So can you give us a quick little lesson on what exactly are amino acids and what are the different types and what do we need them for?
Sure. The amino acids are the building blocks of protein. So our body has thousands of proteins in the body, all with distinct purposes or functions. And the proteins are basically a string of amino acids linked together. So there are way over 300, maybe almost 400 different amino acids. But in the body, there are many fewer. And in fact, the proteins in your body are composed of 20 different amino acids. And the order, the amount of each individual amino acid and the order in which they're linked together defines the specific protein and what its function will be. There are the sources of the amino acids that are used to produce the protein in the body are derived either from being produced within the body, and those would be the non-essential amino acids. And then there's a group of amino acids called essential amino acids, which are 9 of them, which are not produced in the body and are required for in the diet to be able to produce new proteins. Now, I should back up just a little bit to talk a little bit about what I mean by produced protein. And that is that although we're born with with all the proteins we need, there's a constant turnover of the proteins, meaning that as the protein is used, its functionality usually decreases. And this is particularly true with muscle protein, where it gets degraded and not functioning as well. And so those proteins are broken down and new, better functioning proteins are produced. So there's this constant protein turnover whereby we break down the older, not so great working proteins and replace them with new, well-functioning proteins. And for that, we need a constant supply of the building blocks of the proteins, the amino acids, to produce new proteins. And the non-essential amino acids can be produced in the body, so they don't really need to be eaten in any great quantity. But the essential amino acids cannot be made in the body. There's no real reservoir of them. So therefore, we really have to eat a regular supply of the essential amino acids to maintain this protein turnover that keeps our body protein in a good state.
Okay, so When we're eating enough dietary protein, does that mean we are automatically eating enough amino acids, the essential amino acids that we need?
No, there's a great variety of the composition of dietary proteins. If we look in a general sense, the plant-based proteins have a much less density of essential amino acids than animal-based proteins. And even within the animal-based proteins, there's a difference in the profile of the essential amino acids. So that the dietary requirements for essential amino acids can be met more readily with animal source of proteins than plant-based proteins. That being said, this isn't really usually a big problem for runners, again, because even on a vegan diet, the amount of essential amino acids eaten with a large caloric intake will likely be sufficient to meet the baseline requirements. So I think that it's important to understand that the dietary requirements are telling us not only how much protein we should eat, but how much of each individual essential amino acid we should eat are predicated on the baseline amount we need to avoid deficiency. And,
right.
And so that the key aspect of what we'll talk about with specific amino acid supplementation is that for optimal physical functioning, particularly with stress like exercise training, that the baseline amount of essential amino acids that you need to avoid deficiency is really not optimal. And so what we're really striving for with the dietary supplementation of essential amino acids is to achieve the optimal protein nutrition, not to just scrape by with the minimal amount to avoid deficiency.
Right. So what is the optimal? I mean, I'm sure it's different for every person. So how do you know what the difference is between baseline and optimal?
Well, that's a debatable point. Obviously, what we'd want the end point we're looking for in running is function. Mm-hmm. And the question is really sort of fundamental, and that is, can we ever get enough dietary essential amino acids from the normal diet to provide the optimal amount for performance? And the end point of any sort of assessment of whether something's useful for running is whether you can run faster and run farther. It's pretty simple. The question is, you know, to do experiments to test that is quite another story, because as you know, you get up one day, you run faster than the other day. It may not have anything to do with what you ate the day before. So,
sure. So that
performance is a tough endpoint. And what we've done in our studies over the years is develop methodologies to be able to quantify the rates at which proteins are produced and degraded over a short period of time, and use those studies to develop formulations, which then ultimately are tested in performance. So it's been a combination of metabolic studies that are very short term, a matter of hours, in response to specific nutrient intakes, and then extending those to actual. Once we get a pretty good idea of what the optimal formulation is, then outcome studies in which performance is an endpoint.
Right. Okay. So obviously protein requirements are going to be different for an endurance runner and a bodybuilder, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think requirements the right word. I'd say the optimal level of protein intake is going to be quite different. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the things that obviously we're trying to do with running is to improve muscle function and muscle strength without increasing muscle bulk, because it's just extra weight. And that I mean, I'm sensitive to that point, because I don't know whether it's a great accomplishment, but one of the things I did was set a record for the Clydesdale division in the marathon, because I never was under 190 pounds, because I'm 6'5". I was pretty thin.
Oh, wow.
So, never under 190 pounds, and recognized that there was just a limit to, you know, how, when I look at the front line of a race, there was nobody 190 pounds standing there ready to run a good race. So that, So the point of protein nutrition in running is to build strength and function without building mass, whereas in the bodybuilders, they're not really obviously concerned about excess mass, so that the component of strength related to muscle mass is also important to them. But as runners, we want to try to minimize the mass increase with, at the same time, increasing the ability to function.
Getting in all my daily greens has been one of the best changes I've made to my health and training this year. I know the importance of fruits and vegetables to my overall health and running performance, and you know that I try my hardest to eat a variety of fruits and veggies every day, but if I have to be honest, it doesn't always happen, even for me. That's why using Athletic Greens has been such a huge difference for me this year. Because it's as simple as adding a scoop to my morning glass of water, I'm now on a solid streak of getting my daily recommended serving of fruits and veggies. Plus, I love the added ease of mind that I got all my micronutrients in, even on days when I do eat a lot of fruits and veggies. One scoop of Athletic Greens contains 75 bioavailable vitamins, minerals, and whole food-sourced ingredients, including a multivitamin, multimineral, probiotic, greens, superfood blend, and more. I feel healthier, have fewer stomach issues, and I feel like I have more focus and energy throughout the day. It has been a game changer for me this year. If you're someone who struggles to get in all the fruit and veggies you need, or who wants to get more consistent but always falls off, or you end up finding tons of fruits and veggies gone bad in the fridge, Athletic Greens will make it simple and delicious. If you want to try them out and get a special bonus of 5 travel packs and a year's supply of vitamin D, head to athleticgreens.com/RTTT. I know you'll love how easy it will be to finally be consistent with your fruit and veggie intake. Give it a try at athleticgreens.com/RTTT.
Point of protein nutrition in running is to build strength and function without building mass, whereas in the bodybuilders, they're not really obviously concerned about excess mass, so that the component of strength related to muscle mass is also important to them. But as runners, we want to try to minimize the mass increase with, at the same time, increasing the ability to function.
So that seems to be the reason why you would want to take an amino acid supplement, is to get everything you need for optimum performance without actually eating more food. Is that what you're saying, or no?
Yeah, exactly. If you take there's a significant difference. There are several differences between taking an amino acid supplement and eating dietary protein. And in the most general sense, the advantage of the dietary supplement with amino acids is you can formulate the mixture exactly to address the specific metabolic process that you want to enhance. And that can be done with a very small amount of calories. For example, an optimal amount of essential amino acids, the maximum amount to get the maximal stimulatory effect on protein turnover with a single dose or meal, is about 15 grams, which is 45 calories. And by comparison, just a pure protein like whey protein is going to be more than twice the amount of calories for the same effect. And when we look at a dietary meal, for example, meal replacements, where it's kind of quantified, that a 15 gram dose of essential amino acids is much more effective than a 400 gram meal replacement that has a mixture of carbs, fat, and protein. So that's one of the main aspects of this whole process. And in fact, going back to the origin of where I was first started thinking about essential amino acid mixtures was funding from NASA. I was at the University of Texas Medical School, and we were providing nutrients for our spaceflight, where every single gram is important that goes on to the at that time, the shuttle. and how can you get the biggest bang for the buck, so to speak, by formulating a mixture which was the lowest calories but still had the greatest effect in terms of the end result. And that's why the essential amino acids are particularly well suited for runners, because what we see over and over in various different studies is not really much effect on muscle mass at all, but a very significant effect on muscle protein turnover and increase in muscle strength and function.
Okay, interesting. Well, you know, I've heard that there's only so much dietary protein that your body can absorb in a single meal. Is that the same with amino acids? Is there a limit to how much you can absorb all at once?
Well, the limit in the with essential amino acids is different in the sense that it's absorbed by diffusion, so that there's really no limit to how much can be absorbed. The question really is how much can be effectively used in a single dose. And that's where the studies where we've quantified the metabolic response to single doses has been useful, and shows that beyond 15 grams of essential amino acids, which would be the equivalent of about a 40 gram dose of protein, that there's no further effectiveness of a single dose. So that to get more effectiveness, you need multiple doses. But I should also say that there's other differences that have turned out to be very important between protein and the free amino acids. And that is, when you eat a meal or even just pure dietary protein, the protein is digested and the amino acids come in over several hours, so that there's a very slow rise in the amino acid concentrations in the blood. And depending on if there's a lot of carbs with a meal, which is usually the case with a runner, the insulin may actually depress the amino acid concentration, so that you really don't have much of an effect of an increase in amino acid levels with dietary protein. And what we see with the free essential amino acids is the blood levels spike within an hour and then decline, and that the peak levels rise to several fold higher than what you get with the dietary protein. And this is an important aspect of the response to the essential amino acids, because at these higher levels, they act as signals where they control metabolic reactions by activating different processes within the cell, which are never activated in the context of eating dietary protein. So that the issue isn't so much absorption, but what's the maximal dose? And we have, worked that out, but also to realize that with that maximal dose, the same amount of dietary protein does not get the amino acid levels anywhere near as high as the essential amino acid supplement does.
Okay. So the body really doesn't have a way of storing essential amino acids. Is that correct?
Well, not really. The only source of stored essential amino acids is in your muscle protein. So that when you don't eat, the muscle protein is broken down and those amino acids are released into the blood, so that all the tissues in the body have availability, so that the muscle acts as kind of a reservoir. We can go without eating for several days and still have muscle function. But if you were to shut off the amino acid availability, for example, to your skin with a rapid protein turnover, as the proteins are broken down, if we didn't have enough amino acids available, the skin would just melt away. So that you have some kind of a reservoir. But the problem is that reservoir taps into muscle protein with a net loss of muscle protein, so that we need to keep eating the dietary essential amino acids as either supplements or part of protein to replace the amino acids that are stored in muscle. So that it's not a freely, you pay a price, put it that way. There you can go several days, you can go a month without eating. But what's going to happen is you're breaking down your muscle protein so that the essential amino acids are available for all the other tissues in your body that can't do without a continual source of dietary proteins.
Okay. And conversely, on the other side of the spectrum, if you take in too much, we just excrete it. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, it'll be metabolized and excreted in various forms. But yeah, going beyond the maximally effective dosage really provides no additional benefit.
Okay. So how do you make amino acids? How are the amino acids from your company produced? Well, what are they made from?
the amino acids, there are two general ways that amino acids can be made. The company that I'm associated with uses fermentation so that they can be consistent with a vegan diet. This is important not only because there's, that certainly within running community, there's a significant percentage of people that are vegan, but also,
I'm one of them.
Yeah, it's particularly important in that plant-based proteins are often deficient in particular amino acids, essential amino acids, so that making it consistent with the vegan diet enables you to smooth out all the balance of the essential amino acids that you need for optimal function. The other way that I think as world food shortages become more prominent is quite common, but not used by us, but widely used, is by the chemical digestion of bird feathers. And it's an interesting story because in Europe, this is the major source of the amino acids, and that they burn over 2 billion tons of duck feathers in Europe every year. So that this is a source of amino acids that ultimately could be tapped into and used for worldwide nutrition. But it's not the source we use because of a specific goal of providing nutrition for performance and recovery and the fact that, you know, that we can do this in a vegan, consistent way. So there's two different approaches. And in fact, if you look at different sources of amino acid mixtures, most commonly they come from the digestion of bird feathers.
Okay, good. I don't think, even if you're not vegan, I don't know if a lot of people want to be eating bird feathers. No.
It's an interesting sidebar, but realize that this is the amino acids that come from China are all coming from digestion of bird feathers.
Wow. Wow. I bet most people did not know that. So how do you use amino acids? Do you take it before you run, after, or even during?
Well, there's, as I said, the big advantage with the essential amino acid formulations is you can make them up to meet specific goals. And the thing that we have two different approaches that are patented that one is designed for performance while exercising and the other is for recovery. As you said, we talked about earlier, the dietary protein or amino acids provide a very small percentage of the total energy to do any sort of running training. But there is a certain amount of increased metabolism of the essential amino acids. And what this creates is an imbalance of the amino acids in the blood. And the major problem with this in the short term is that it affects the neurotransmitter balance in the brain. The amino acid, the balance of serotonin and dopamine in the brain is essential for determining whether you go to sleep at night, where the predominant effect is the serotonin dominating the dopamine, or if you're alert and have good focus, in which the dopamine production exceeds the serotonin production. And this balance is really the major factor that contributes to the feeling of fatigue. So as your amino acids are oxidized, the branched chain amino acids, leucine in particular, is oxidized to a greater extent, and so its proportion goes down, and tryptophan, which is the precursor for serotonin, goes up. Now, the several amino acids, tryptophan, leucine, isoleucine, valine, and phenylalanine, are all transported into the brain by the same mechanism. So when the amino acid, so when the branched chain amino acids go down and the tryptophan doesn't, that means more tryptophan goes into the brain and serotonin production starts increasing. And this is what leads to the feeling of mental fatigue as you are grinding on in a long run. Conversely, what we have accomplished with the perform formulation is that the essential amino acids are tailored so that there's no tryptophan And the precursor for the production of dopamine, which is phenylalanine, is elevated. So that as you start using the amino acids as an oxidative substrate, that the balance is still favors the production of dopamine. And this is the predominant basis for why you can maintain focus. And you can accomplish this with drinking with maybe a half hour before you run. It's hard to maintain any kind of significant fluid intake during a run. And it's not really necessary because the blood amino acids will go up and peak and maintain an elevated level for at least an hour. So for unless you're doing runs over an hour, then it's really not necessary to drink during. But if you're doing a 2 or 3 hour run, then it absolutely will make a major difference. The secondary aspect of the run is that as these as you exercise, your muscle proteins are broken down. And by providing the amino acids during the exercise, you decrease the rate of muscle degradation. But that's really more the role of recovery.
Right.
And recovery,
right.
The importance of the amino acids in recovery is a different profile. You don't need to worry about the neurotransmitter, but rather a profile that is optimal for producing a higher rate of muscle protein turnover. And the higher rate of protein turnover will not only improve muscle function, but it also has been shown to decrease inflammation and muscle soreness. So that a different formulation following exercise is really preferable, where you can restore muscle protein turnover and avoid muscle soreness and inflammation.
Okay. So when you are taking amino acids during exercise, let me just see if I have this straight. They actually activate hormones in your body. Is that what you're saying?
No, it's the what do you call neurotransmitters. So the dopamine and serotonin are chemicals that are released at neural endings that then fire the muscle. They serve a lot of functions within the brain. The neurotransmitters are what cause the different communication between cells in the brain. So that they're not hormones. They're not released into the body. They're released only from one nerve ending to another to transmit the feelings of fatigue or the perception of sleepiness. Things like that are determined by the neurotransmitters. And those are affected very directly by the amino acid profile in the blood. And this is why dietary protein really doesn't serve any useful purpose for this, because you don't have the kind of balance of the amino acids in the blood that will optimize the excitatory neurotransmitters in the brain and kind of slow down the serotonin. Probably you've heard of the I don't know whether it's really true or not, but the turkey gives you a feeling of sleepiness. And that's because it has a high proportion of tryptophan, which stimulates serotonin. And that's the mechanism. So we're talking about the same mechanism as why turkey makes you sleepy. And we're reversing that by making an optimal profile of the amino acids in the blood.
Are you ready to finally get away? Would you love the opportunity to learn one-on-one with the Runners Connect coaches, get hands-on strength training, running form and stretching sessions, enjoy fabulous runs, and connect with runners who get you? Then you'll be just as excited as we are that our wildly popular running retreats are finally back. Our 4 and 5 day retreats offer you an intimate, informative, relaxing, and amazing running experience that's also affordable. For those that want to experience some of the most amazing running trails in the U.S., including the Grand Canyon, then our 5 day retreat to Flagstaff, Arizona, July 7th to 11th, is right up your alley. Our second camp this summer is a unique trip to Boston to tour the Boston Marathon course, July 15th to 18th. It's the perfect opportunity to preview the course if you're running in October, or run the course for the first time if you qualified and the race was canceled. You don't need to have qualified for Boston to join us. Now, keep in mind, these retreats are not for elite runners. They are for runners like you who love running and just want to improve. Most of our attendees are between 40 and 70 years young and range in ability from Boston qualifiers to those who are looking to break 3 hours for the half marathon or those who are just getting started. To see all the dates, accommodations, prices, photos, and other details, head to runnersconnect.net/retreats. Of course, we'll be following all local health protocols, and we have a 100% refund policy if we need to cancel the camp for health reasons. We hope you're able to join us for one of these amazing retreats. Again, that's runnersconnect.net/retreats to learn more.
Probably you've heard of the I don't know whether it's really true or not, but the turkey gives you a feeling of sleepiness. And that's because it has a high proportion of tryptophan, which stimulates serotonin. And that's the mechanism. So we're talking about the same mechanism as why turkey makes you sleepy. And we're reversing that by making an optimal profile of the amino acids in the blood.
Okay. So do you guys have a amino acid formulation to help me with my insomnia too?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's an interesting point because there definitely are formulations. That's not something that we've done because the major focus there is adding a large amount of tryptophan, which I'm not, you know, in terms of the relation to in relation to performance, I've always been leery of adding something which actually slows you down.
So, gotcha.
And if you do a good workout, you should have shouldn't have that much trouble sleeping.
All right. So you also are the director for the Center of Translational Research on Aging and Longevity at the University of Arkansas. So I would love to hear how amino acids help you stay young and vital. Is that the secret to staying young?
Well, I think that I would be exaggerating to say that we've discovered the fountain of youth.
Oh, darn.
The thing which is obvious when you see a lot of older people, that ability to function physically is really the primary determinant of quality of life. If you can't get up out of a chair, then medical costs and everything else go out the window. But just being able to do the activities you like is so important. And what we've found and shown in older people that we can, by optimizing the essential amino acid intake with the formulation specifically targeting older people, which is a different formulation than younger people, that we can improve physical function, even in patients with heart failure that really are unable to do any exercise, that we've had significant improvements in the ability to walk a certain distance in a given amount of time. And the goals are much less aggressive in terms of performance, but yet maybe physiologically much more important because we are able to, you know, take somebody that really can't get out of a chair to where at least they can go out and get the mail and go to the store and function at a basic level. And that's really one of the primary targets of our focus is the enhancing of the physical capabilities of older individuals to maintain a decent quality of life.
Yeah. Well, what about older athletes? Do older athletes have an advantage when it comes to longevity and aging?
Well, it's been very difficult to show exercise having a major effect on survival length of time, on mortality. But as far as morbidity, that is different diseases and, you know, quality of life, it's the most important aspect of aging is a steady, a consistent exercise program. So that, you know, what we're doing in everything we do with from the nutritional standpoint is really optimally performing when you are coupling that with exercise, and exercise really is the key. And it's remarkable how the expression of use it or lose it is so apropos for older people, because once you go into a slump and don't do much exercise, it can be so hard to ever get back into gear, because a lot of older people are at a threshold where that if they just get a little worse, the bottom drops out, and then they really can't exercise at all. And then that spirals down to a whole series of bad outcomes. So that a good basic nutritional program with a higher protein intake than in the case of younger people, coupled with exercise, is the basic form, the basic foundation of all of our approaches. And then the essential amino acids are used to optimize certain aspects and to take that basic good diet and exercise and amplify it to where you really see some additional beneficial effects.
All right. Well, I can't agree with you more. I mean, we're hoping that more people can be runners for life. So move it or lose it is definitely true. Well, before I let you go, Bob, I have a few questions that I ask everyone. The first one is, if you could go back and talk to yourself 60 years ago when you first started running, what advice would you give yourself?
Yeah, well, that's a tough one. I think as far as just the specifics of running, I didn't realize for a long time, for several years, the importance of a long run. And the first several marathons I ran were all in the range of 3 hours to 2:50. And then after one marathon, I was talking to a guy about what he was doing for training and said that there was a group of them that met every Sunday and ran 20 miles, which kind of blew my mind because I'd never run over 12 miles other than racing the marathon. And so I started that, and that was in the spring. And by the fall, I ran 2:25 without anything other than adding that long run. So I think that would probably be the major advice relative to running. Maybe second place would be how you can really get a lot out of two runs a day, as opposed to one grinding run. And that, of course, came out of just the fact that I was running to and from work. But I think that that advice would help as well.
Okay. What's the greatest gift that running has given you?
Well, I think that it's just, you know, going back to looking at little kids running around, I just enjoy running. And I can remember one time, in fact, it was in the Boston Marathon, because I remember it so well. It had a big impression on me. And it was about the 10-mile mark, and I was running along next to a guy, and we were running right about 5-minute pace. And this guy, who I didn't know, turned to me and said, "Isn't it great to be able to run this fast?" And that was just kind of always the driving force for me. I just really enjoyed running fast. And of course, lots of people ran faster, but it was fast enough to really have fun just with the experience of being able to run fast.
And finally, where can listeners connect with you?
I'm not really active on social media, so I think that but I'm happy to answer emails. And my email address is rrw2@live.com. So, you know, I love talking about running, but I just am not engaged with the social media. So the best way to answer questions is just if you shoot an email, I can deal with it that way.
Okay. We'll have that email address in our show notes. So most people listen to this on the run, so they're probably not memorizing that, but we will have it easy to find for them. Well, Bob, thank you so much for sharing all your knowledge with us and coming on the show today.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed it.
I cannot even imagine running 9 miles to work and 9 miles back every day, and then also having 3 speed sessions a week plus a long run. I have to say, as a coach, that is a schedule that would break most runners pretty quickly. So be careful if you are planning to add Bob's routine to your running lifestyle. I was happy to hear that Dr. Wolf said repeatedly that if you eat enough calories as a runner, you are getting enough protein, whether on an omnivore diet or a vegan diet. But there may be some cases where adding extra amino acids to your diet can help performance and recovery if you don't want to add more dietary protein for whatever reason. It's a very interesting theory, and you know what? I'm game. I've started to try it myself just to see how it goes. I'll be sure to report back here on the Run to the Top, so stay tuned.
If you are loving the show, the best way to show your support is to follow us on Apple Podcasts and leave a review. It only takes a couple minutes, but it truly does show us some love. And of course, it's all free. Other ways are to share the show with your friends on social media, tag me, The Planted Runner, and Runners Connect. We share video clips of every episode first on Instagram, so be sure to follow us both there and our Runners Connect YouTube channel. And finally, each week, I write my personal take on every episode, every Friday, delivered right to your inbox on the Elite Treatment. Join us for free at runnersconnect.net/podcast. It's also where I share a sneak peek of future guests and announce contests and giveaways first, because honestly, it's just for my very favorite listeners. So if you want to get in on the extra love, once again, head to runnersconnect.net/podcast. Well, you've done it. You've gotten all the way to the end of another episode of The Run to the Top. I'm Claire Bartholik, and I coach at runnersconnect.net and theplantedrunner.com. Have a great run today.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.